to the MMA Roadshow episode number 54. We are in Zagreb, Croatia. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is with me. And, of course, the king of puns himself, Simon Head, is over here with me. UK journalist covering mixed martial arts. Been doing it full time now for about a year, right?
That's right, yeah. It's going really well. Been there for a year. I'm now full-time member of staff on the paper, so full steam ahead. It's good stuff.
It's good stuff. We've crossed paths, of course, for you're no stranger to the podcast, of course. We've had you on a couple of times. I did need to say, though, I did learn something new this week. Your brother was really meant to be called Richard Head.
If my mum had had anything to do with it, that may have happened. Yeah, she liked the name Richard. My dad, however, thankfully had an attack of common sense and said, I'm vetoing that. That's not happening. Any other name beginning with an R is good with me, and they called him Robert. So he dodged a major bullet.
Your dad saved him a lot of pain. A lot of pain and suffering he saved him from.
From a personal point of view, I would have preferred it if it had been called Richard. But, you know, what can I say? He's probably a very relieved man that he's been called Rob. So, yeah, he dodged one there.
That's hilarious, man. I always thought, you know, I told you this earlier when James Head was fighting in the UFC, you know, I openly campaigned because I wanted him to be Mr. Potato for his nickname, just to hear Bruce Buffer scream out Mr. Potato Head. And I thought that would be great. But can you imagine if there was a fighter in the UFC named Richard Head?
I don't even know what to say. Mr. Potato Head, though, that is a wasted opportunity, I think. I think it needed to happen.
Marketing genius.
Even if it's just for one fight.
That's before Reebok rolled along. They could have anybody's sponsor.
That's it. I mean, obviously, that gets shut down now, you know, branding. But Mr. Buffer saying that would just be...
I'd love it.
Would just be
I'd love it. That'd be a
fantastic.
Classic. I think it'd be history. Well, listen, we're here for UFC Fight Night 86, Rothwell versus Dos Santos. Let's set the scene here in Croatia. First time in Croatia. Let me just say, the gorgeous first couple of days here. We had some just absolutely incredible weather, mid-70s Fahrenheit, whatever that is, and that Celsius thing that you guys come up with.
Mid-20s.
Okay, mid-20s. There you go.
Early to mid-20s.
Whatever that is that everybody else in the world uses except us in America, that silly system that everyone else uses. It was beautiful. We've got a little rain today. But what I love about this country so far, the frosty beverages, which we are consuming right now, are dirt cheap. This is in line with Poland in terms of if you're looking for a European destination, maybe you're trying to do it on a budget, you want to see something fun, you want to have a good time, but you're trying to do it on an economic basis, man, this place is all right.
I think it beats Poland. I think this might be cheaper. I mean, to set the scene and to sort of give you an idea, we went out, you guys arrived on Wednesday, is
sure.
that right?
Yep.
And we met up in the lobby and we headed out, did a bit of sightseeing as much as... Three guys who probably aren't that cultured, if we're honest, decided to do. We went and checked out a cathedral.
Speak for
and,
yourself, Englishman.
Yeah, you know, I come from a country of culture. I'm kind of desensitized to it. So, but we went in and we found this little side street that had a restaurant in it that served Italian food. They do their pizza and pasta very well over here, and we probably picked a place that was on the higher end, I would
sure,
have thought, given
sure.
where it was, right opposite this beautiful cathedral. And we sat down there. We had three pizzas the size of dustbin lids.
Yeah, couldn't finish them.
And
couldn't even come close.
And I think we had three or four rounds of beer, and the bill came to less than 30 English pounds, which, dollars-wise, we're talking $45.
About $45, about $15 a piece for a full pizza and a couple of beers.
Unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
Unbelievable. And... and it's good stuff as well. It's not like you're being fobbed off with cheap rubbish. The pizzas were lovely, and the beers are cold and crisp and very nice.
Can't beat it, man. It's a gorgeous city. This is, of course, the capital of Croatia. Beautiful buildings everywhere, man. The state buildings and the museums and stuff that are around here. But, let it be said, graffiti everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
I think that's a legacy of times past. And, you know, you think this is... Thank you very much.
Oh, nice little round.
We've got some bar
some
snacks.
Crisps here and some pretzels.
Pete, this is very nice. They've put them in front of me. I don't know what that says about me. But I will share, I promise. But yeah, this is part of what used to be known as Yugoslavia. You know, there's been an awful lot happened in this part of the world since then. And independence and sort of declaring who you are and your national identity is something that's very important to Croatia in particular, and I don't know what the graffiti says. I don't speak very I know how to say another round in Croatian. Thanks to our master of linguistics, Ken Hathaway, Mr. Cold Coffee.
I was like, who's Ken?
Sorry, I've broken the fourth wall. I've done it again. That's an edit point for you.
Drugi Runda.
And, but yeah, I do think that's part of it. I think it's the nationalistic thing. So I think it's a bit of a throwback to the past. But you're dead right. There's some beautiful architecture here. And it's been nice to have a bit of time to go around and, you know, check some of that stuff out.
It has. There's some women with some beautiful architecture here as well. I'm just going to throw that out there.
That's true. I wouldn't mind tagging that either. Thank you very much. Dropping the mic.
Cold coffee out. Well, listen, let's just throw this out there. If you're a regular listener of the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan, we certainly appreciate that. If you're a regular listener that listens live or is close to live as soon as we release it, if you're one of those early download types, you may realize that we're a few hours late to the party. We normally record this on a Thursday night, but Cold Coffee and I made an executive decision. We said, look, we got some interviews lined up for Friday. What if we push it back just a few hours so we can include some of that content? We've got a great interview with Josh Barnett. We're going to do that. He's always fun. James Elliott, who, of course, is the head of the European office, we've got him lined up. Plus, we had a couple interviews set up. And we're like, you know what? The smart play here is let's not do Thursday night. Let's do Friday afternoon after we get those interviews in place. And I think it, you know, this afternoon as we were doing the interviews, I thought it really paid off. Fantastic interview with Josh Barnett. Fantastic interview with James Elliott. And I'm just here to tell you that you won't hear a goddamn word of it because I lost the audio and all of it.
No.
I'm telling you. If you could read lips, you could tell it was a really, really good interview. No, he gets up there and immediately starts cursing after he tries to check for it and starts complaining of like, no. Goes over, double checks, opens up his camera to make sure that he, in fact, took the right card from it, and then went back and proceeded to put it in there and was getting no audio. And at first, I'm like, all right, you know, let me take a look. You know, maybe you're not checking something. Maybe you're doing whatever. And lo and behold, you know, we switch it up. Typically, I would be down there and probably help him shoot it. So he kind of made a call so I could stay editing some of the videos that we had. And in the process of doing that, using his gear while doing the interviews, he wasn't able to monitor it because of his setup. And so he just assumed everything was good as normal. And unfortunately,
it was not. So two fantastic interviews that I had planned for the MMA Roadshow, just gone. Now, I've got the video. So if you guys are interested in this, anybody out there listening is interested.
And is an expert. And if you're an expert lip reader.
I will upload this for you. Yep. I will put it on YouTube. I'll send you a private link. And you can just read lips all day long. And you can go, what a fantastic interview.
Unfortunate part is they won't hear your great questions because they can't read your lips.
I wasn't on.
But you could just, it makes it more fun because when you're reading the lips, it could be anything that they're answering. It just makes it even more exciting.
She send it to the guys who do that YouTube channel, Bad Lip Reading.
Oh, Bad Lip Reading.
And they'll
hilarious.
Give you something completely different. They're probably just as good. You know?
That's actually a great idea, because I love that stuff, man. So I was pissed off immediately. We rolled the dice, pushing the roadshow back a little bit, thinking that it would pay dividends, and instead, it just fell to shit.
These things do happen, though. You know, when you're on the road, you're traveling with Kit. I mean, the reason this all happened stemmed from the fact that you were trying to do Cold Coffee a favor.
I was!
You were trying to make his life easier.
I was trying to stem the anger that is strewn across his face right now.
Angry Kenny. We don't want Angry Kenny. We don't want Angry Kenny, and we definitely don't want passive-aggressive Morgan. And if they turn up at the same time, get out the road.
Bad news.
Well, fortunately, Simon Head, I know you did talk to James Elliott as well. Of course, he's been on the job about 6 months now. In the interview that I lost, we did talk about a couple things that I did want to mention. Europe's on quite the roll right now. You know, London was just an incredibly financially successful event, a fun event. Zagreb, it's going to be sold out. It's basically pretty close to sold out for now. And this is a big arena. From what I understand, I think they've got it scaled for about 13,000. I think it can hold about 15, but that's if you pull out all the screens.
With the big screens and stuff,
They want to put that full presentation out there. So it sounds like they're going to have about 13,000, which for a fight night is an incredible, incredible amount. Rotterdam is done already, right? I mean, that's a month away, and that's already sold out. I overheard James Elliott actually speaking with somebody else. I don't think he mentioned it in my interview, but I believe that they have set the gate record for that event, for a single-day sporting event.
Wow.
So, you know, just financial success everywhere. I'm sure he mentioned the same thing to you. We put it up on MMA Junkie earlier. It sounds like Germany is on the line for the third quarter. I think he wouldn't mention it, but I think I've heard through the grapevine maybe Hamburg is going to be the place where it's going to be. And then in the fourth quarter, he mentioned coming back to the UK. Some rumblings I have heard out there that it may be Northern Ireland as a potential destination. Some cool stuff going on in Europe right now. And as somebody that's based in Europe, you've made the trip over to Vegas, but of course your home venue, so to speak, is the European scene.
Yeah,
I gotta think you gotta be pretty excited, because it sounds like to me, and I don't want to put it all on. I mean, I know James Elliott's only been around 6 months, so some of the things that are happening here were already in play before he was in. But I gotta say, man, I think this is about as exciting as the UFC has been on the European front since they started coming here.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at some of the early shows, we had some big shows. You know, you think we had Rampage Henderson and things like that. But we'd get a show, and then maybe a year or 2 years would go by, and then we'd maybe get another one. And I think what we're getting now is they're treating Europe now almost as another major market. So you've got Brazil, you've got the US. Obviously, that's the home market. But now Europe is delivering for them, but it's delivering commercially now, and I think that's the difference. They're doing these big TV deals with major networks across the continent, and that's one of the things where James really comes into his own, because before he took the job as the head man, the lead guy here for the UFC in Europe, he was the senior director of content. He was the guy brokering the TV deals. So it's almost like it's like a continuation of his work, but now he's got control of the reins
right
now. And we've got this situation where big TV deals are being done across the continent, and they go hand in hand with the events. You need the event, but you also need the media to back it up as well. If you're just doing the show, you're kind of shouting in an empty room a little bit. You need the media noise to really push it. And
media turnout was huge in London, massive in London.
Huge. It was, I think, media-wise, that's the biggest show we've ever had.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you what, I was a little worried about this one. But as we came to the open workouts earlier this week at the arena, I thought it was a pretty strong media contingent.
It was. I mean, obviously, you know, where we quite often see the usual suspects knocking around. And even at European shows, you tend to see a certain group of guys who we kind of recognize from the European circuit. This show, in terms of English media, we've got three people here. We've got myself, we've got Jim Edwards, who's covering stuff for the Daily Mirror, a rival paper, we won't talk about it, and and we've got the lads from BBC Three, who have just recently done a deal with the UFC.
The digital stuff.
Yes, so they're doing bits and pieces as well. But really, that's it. There's you guys from the States, and that's it from the US. You know, so in terms of the English speaking media, that, or naturally English speaking media, that's pretty much all we have. So you do then think, how much extra are we going to get in terms of local media? That was a strong turnout, and you know, the elbows had to come out a little bit, you know, at points to make sure that my camera wasn't getting knocked about when I was interviewing JDS.
It was no Brisbane.
I was going to say, I mean, it doesn't sound like it was like Australia, but there was definitely some people there.
You didn't have to get any chairs for anybody.
No, did not have any chairs.
Which is good to know, you know. Didn't have to set any chairs up. Listen to previous episodes if you didn't understand that reference. But no, I thought it was good. And I'm enjoying the vibe of it. I mean, it's... For me, I'm zeroing in a lot more on certain athletes, whereas you guys, you're MMA Junkie. You're covering the full gamut. For me, it's the main event. It's the two British guys. And the other guys I'm really interested in watching are Derek Lewis and Curtis Blaydes. Curtis is a guy who's coming in 5-0, five finishes. Interested to see how he does against Francis Ngannou. Had a good win in his UFC debut. So that's an interesting one. Derek Lewis is one of the characters of the UFC, without a doubt. I mean, you know, the conversations we've had with him, some on the mic, some not on the mic, have been absolute gold. And it's been great to actually meet the guy for the first time, like,
right,
properly, and have a chat with him. And it's been a fun week so far. It's felt a lot lighter in some respects to some UFC shows I've covered, but it's been great. And I'll tell you something else. the atmosphere in that arena on Sunday night, I think, is going to be something pretty special. The Croatian football fans or soccer fans are renowned for their atmosphere. And to be fair, I thought this for Poland, and it really didn't happen that,
true, it was
that way.
Flat.
But Poland had their own domestic promotion that tended to dominate the market.
Yeah.
This is different. This is a market that's never had a major mixed martial arts show before. And the UFC have landed. They've got a couple of Croatian guys on the card. They love their big guys. They love the heavyweights. And we've got five fights on the card. Four of them.
Four in a row.
At the top to
four
finish.
Four heavyweight tonight. Fights in a row.
If only this was a Fight Pass show. We'd be back at the hotel by 8:30.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be great fun. And, so far, so good, mate. So far, so good.
Of course, the main event, Ben Rothwell, Junior Dos Santos, that's the biggest fight in terms of what it really means. One of those guys is going to be in a good position moving forward. One of them, not so much. I honestly feel like it's kind of a must-win for Junior Dos Santos right now. He's kind of been going back and forth. Really didn't look that great the last time out. Ben Rothwell, of course, has kind of had this late career resurgence. That's a big one. So big fight there. Interesting to note that Ben Rothwell is as friendly of a guy as he is, and he is super friendly. Turned down our request to do some pre-fight interviews. He did everything that was required and mandated of him by the UFC, but decided that he didn't want to do any additional pre-fight interviews. Said more than happy to do anything after the fight. So, you know, I don't know if that speaks to his focus, his mental position. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I just thought that was an interesting note, because I think anybody that's a supporter of MMA Junkie, part of Junkie Nation, certainly anybody part of the MMA Roadshow crowd knows that Ben Rothwell's got much love for both Junkie and myself and Cold Coffee. But so for him to politely decline to do any pre-fight interviews, I thought, interesting to note. And you mentioned Derek Lewis. No hiding there. Derek Lewis has become a favorite of the MMA Roadshow in particular. I did bring my red shirt that is packed away in the hotel room right now. Of course, longtime listeners of the MMA Roadshow will know that Derek called me out in an interview in Houston one time. He said, "Your blue shirt gives me bad luck. You should go wear a red shirt or something." So I had nothing better to do. I went and bought a red shirt. Wore it under my blue shirt, which, of course, I wear for my son. Took my blue shirt off for my son for his fight, and he's been undefeated ever since. So I take full credit for his
absolutely.
Winning streak. I mean, there's
be
no doubt
a cut it's of the bonuses,
really man. All me. I mean, if we're thinking about it, I don't think he really does much. It's just the power of the red shirt. But Cole Coffey, you were around. Derek Lewis, I never quite know if he's joking or not. I'm not sure like how truthful he's being.
Yeah.
But he says he took this fight without asking where it was first. He said, "Yeah, I'll fight Gonzaga, no problem. Anytime. You know, anybody, I'll fight anybody, but not any place. He said he didn't realize it was going to be in Croatia. Had to fly over here to Croatia. Hated the travel. Says he will never do it internationally again. Learned himself a big valuable lesson. He's been having trouble sleeping. I don't know if he's joking or not. Do you think it's true that he took this fight and didn't even bother to ask where it was?
Well, I bet he asked where it was, but I bet it was just a matter of when they come to do a fact check. I think he's also one of the guys that said he wants to fight multiple times, as many as he can each year. So I think when it comes down to taking a fight, I think he's probably first, his answer is going to be yes, and asked his team to deal with the logistics after the fact. And then they probably told him, you know, hey, this, you know, this, it's a long way. And he probably was just like, oh, that's fine. And then when it got down to brass tacks and, you know, and tickets are bought and you start realize where you're going, then maybe he thought after the fact. But I think it's probably him just being his normal funny self, in the sense that he's like, you know, yeah, I thought about it, but now nobody realized how long, like, this took us a long time.
It really did.
To get over here.
It's further than going to London, then you got to go another couple hours.
Yeah,
back.
Two connections, like, didn't you, on the way over?
Yeah, like, and even for us, which we're road warriors, I mean, like, this one, I felt this one.
Yeah.
It felt like, just like as if we were going down to deep part of Australia or something. So I can imagine some of those guys are probably like, wow, what did I get myself into? But, I think it's him probably having some fun and, you certainly know he's going to be prepared for the fight, and he's going to show up for it. But he's also the kind of guy, he might tease around it now, but I guarantee they offer him another quick fight in the future. He's going to say yes again
right
without even looking and seeing where it's at. So
it's a good fight, man. Derek's dropped some other ones. He did say at one point that Gonzaga, it looks like a 70s porn star. I think he also said he looks like, because of all the body hair.
Okay, I was going to say, is it the hair?
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah.
Derek has proven himself that he is an old-school porn watcher. I mean, like, he pulls up some GIFs that I'm like, that's some old shit porn right there, you know? And not that I know.
The
I
fact
just,
that you're
I
recognizing these
it.
References,
I
mean, Kenny, is saying more about
I,
you
I just,
than
I just,
it is about
I hear things. I hear things on the
I
web.
I saw a documentary on it one time.
And at film school, yes, that's it.
It was
art.
Study.
It was art.
I think he also called him like an old caveman at one point.
Wow.
He's had some. But I'm definitely looking forward to that fight. You mentioned Simon Curtis Blaydes versus Francis Ngannou. I think that could be a really fun fight. Both those guys are kind of young, up-and-coming prospects. To see two young guys in the heavyweight division have as much power as they have, I think there's no way that was not fireworks. I will say, definitely not the sexiest card. There's no question about it. This is a very European-flavored card, so I think some of the American audience will struggle to look at fights. And, of course, you start trying to pick out names. There's not a lot of big names on there, but I will say two other fights that I'm really, really looking forward to. Mirbek Taisimov has kind of struck me. I like him a lot, and I had a couple different people tell me that his opponent, Demir Hadjovic, that they're big fans of his as well. And I watched a little bit of his tape, and the guy brings it. I think that's going to be a fantastic fight on the preliminary card. And the Fight Pass featured card between Lucas Martinez and Robert Whiteford,
yep.
I think that's going to be incredible as well. So not the biggest names on this card, but I look at it top to bottom, I think we may end up with a fairly entertaining night.
Yeah, I think, and it's funny how things work out. Quite often you get these cards, and you're looking at the A-list star power, if you like, and they sell the cards in advance, and you often get a load of anticipation, and then sometimes they don't quite deliver in the way that you hope. And you get cards like this where there's names on there you know, and there's quite a few that maybe you don't. And you think, yeah, you know, I don't know. But then you watch it, and what you tend to find is those guys who perhaps you don't know, they're the ones really, really going balls to the wall to really make a name for themselves.
Right.
And what you get is you get exciting fights. Mm-hmm. You get exciting fights. For, you know, for a lot of these guys on the card, this is an opportunity for them. You know, this isn't just the fact that it's a UFC Fight Night show. This is a UFC Fight Night show that's not just on UFC Fight Pass. This is going to be on television in America. Mm-hmm. So this is of relevance to the American market. If they can score a big win on American TV, that just rises their stock even more. Then maybe that gets them a prelim spot on a pay-per-view further down the line. And, you know, this is a golden opportunity for these guys. And quite often, and we've seen it before in Australia a couple of times, where we've looked at the fight cards and thought, it's not stellar,
right?
But the fights have been.
Yep.
And people pay to watch good fights. You don't want to see, you know, superstar guys walking around and not, you know, just sort of grinding out a decision and fighting safe. You want people in there going for finishes and fighting to win inside the distance. I'll be really interested to see how many of Sunday night's fights end up finishing inside the distance. I think we'll see more than half of them.
I agree.
Will be finished inside the distance.
I agree.
And that's not a bad ratio.
I agree. Listen, I know you also spoke with James Elliott. I'm sure your interview wasn't quite as good as mine. Mine was stellar.
Audio's better.
Audio's better. I believe you call that taking a piss. taking the piss. Anything else that stood out with you? I mean, obviously, you know things that are going to be really hardcore English, and that's fine to share as well. I mean, there's TV deals and things like that in place, but was there anything else in talking to James Elliott that really stood out for you during your conversation with him?
The main thing,
which
really,
obviously was not quite as good as mine, but the idea was indeed better.
The main thing that came across really was the growth in stature of Europe as a market, I think, and that's the overriding headline from a global perspective. You've got the UFC. We're going to have five events. By the end of the year, we're going to have five events will have been held in Europe. And, you know, we've got potentially two in the UK, which, bear in mind, we didn't have any the previous year. That's a big thing. Lorenzo Fertitta has gone on record saying that they want to hold as many as four UK events every year.
That's insane.
How they fit that into the schedule, I don't know. And I asked about this, and it's something that James says is achievable, but the whole movable feast that is the UFC calendar is so difficult to match up arena availability and all the rest of it with the fact that you need to hit certain other markets, and it's a balancing act. You know, you've got your Dublins and your Londons and your Stockholms, but you've got somewhere like Glasgow, and that's a market that's crying out for another show. You know, we spoke to Rob Whiteford today, and you know, he's more than anyone else banging the drum for another show up there. And maybe that's a potential candidate for the end of the year as well. You know, you mentioned Northern Ireland as a possibility. Glasgow could be a possibility as well. So it'd be interesting to see where that ends up going. But Glasgow as a market and as a show was a big one. But the overall picture is we're now in a position where over here in Europe, we've sometimes thought of ourselves as the poor relations. We've tended to get, you guys get all the big superstar stuff.
Yes, we do.
And America. We get...
I mean, it is the greatest country in the world.
Just
saying. Okay, now continue.
And, where's I going with this? Yes, and you've thrown
like
me
you
with your...
the Americans.
With your political content. And, but now what's happening is we're getting these shows now that, A, they're relevant to the markets that they're in.
Prime but, time.
And they're being... I was saying to someone earlier today, the Michael Bisping Anderson Silva fight in London was a fantastic thing for the UFC. It was a great, great vehicle for UFC Fight Pass. But think for a minute if that had been on free TV in the UK, that would have been the Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin moment, I believe. The stars just weren't quite aligned for that to happen. But a bit further down the line, with a better TV deal, and showing a big Conor McGregor fight, or whether it be Michael Bisping fighting for a world title, whatever it may be, the sport is just banging on the glass ceiling right now, and it isn't going to take too much more before it breaks through. You saw that with the media in London, but it's now happening overseas in mainland Europe, and they're balancing it between going to the markets they know they can hit and do well, and going to new places like we are this week in Zagreb, and spreading the gospel further across Europe. So it seems to be working, and what they're doing, they're bringing a good product each time. They've got a strong enough roster that they can put shows on like this. They're selling out 13,000-14,000 seat arenas, and I think what we're going to see on Sunday will be a thoroughly entertaining night. Maybe not A-list, but I think the fights will be entertaining.
I agree. Well, I also had a fantastic interview with former UFC heavyweight champion Josh Barnett. Audio not so great.
My audio is better.
I had a great conversation with him. Talked to him first about the loss of Ben Rothwell. He was very respectful, you know, about what happened. He said, "Look, I made some mistakes. I had myself in a bad position. Shouldn't have been in that submission to begin with. Wasn't as impressed with the go-go choke as maybe everybody else is." He said, "Listen,
I overheard that." Yeah.
Yeah, he said, "Listen, man, other people have done this. This is not something that we're unfamiliar with and incapable of dealing with." He's like, "I just had myself in a bad position. I was against the cage, and I really didn't have any place to escape." But it was kind of interesting to hear. He says, Josh Barnett told me he'd like to fight two more times this year. And so, like to hear that. I mean, he's 38 years old. Certainly, he's got to be nearing the end. I'm not trying to rush him out of the sport. Heavyweights can kind of hang around a little bit longer, and he seems to be in good enough shape, to be honest with you, that he can continue as long as he wants. But said he'd like to fight two more times this year. In the meantime, I also had a fantastic conversation that you won't hear a word of about professional wrestling, the relationship between professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. Of course, he's doing commentary for New Japan Pro Wrestling in the United States on Access TV. He was in Dallas for WrestleMania. I'm not a wrestling guy, okay? I'm just going to put that right out there. I'm not a wrestling guy. But when I see Cowboy Stadium, you know, I'm a Dallas native. When I see that stadium filled with 90,000 people, and I think there's some argument over how many were there, but it was somewhere between 95 and 105,000 people is what I'm hearing. Just to see a spectacle like that is impressive. And I asked him, like, you know, is there a way that MMA can do that right now? And he straight up said, no, there's not the fights right now. We can't do it. But I think we can get to that point at some point. And I really had an interesting conversation with him. Again, you'll never hear it. About, you know, the blurred line sometimes between pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Because I think hardcore MMA fans, and I'll be honest, I'm probably guilty of it as well, worry sometimes about MMA being too pro wrestling. Too pro wrestling with, you know, the bravado and the personalities and the talk of trash. And I kind of asked him, like, how do you feel about that? And he's like, John, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. He's like, these guys have got to sell themselves. And I said, well, you know, but if you had 100 Chael Sonnens, if you had 100 Conor McGregors, if you had 100 Ronda Rouseys, I mean, wouldn't this sport be a little bit ridiculous? And he's like, well, yeah, but you don't need 100 of anything. He's like, you just need everybody to be out there and kind of amp it up a little bit. I guess maybe I'm evolving as a fan. I mean, I know I cover the sport, but I watch it still as a fan, to be honest. And, you know, I worry about it being too shticky and too gimmicky or whatever. And he said, yeah, but you got to remember, at the end of the day, this is prize fighting. You know, this is not a sport. This is prize fighting. This is something that we're trying to get people to pay money to watch. And the only way you do that is by dialing up the personality and dialing up, you know, and giving people a reason to tune in. And you know what? can't argue with him.
Yeah, but it's just kind of tough. You know, granted, I haven't watched wrestling since, you know, when I was real little and there was, like, Superfly Snuka and Hulk Hogan and, you know, the Junkyard Dog and all those cats going on. You know, but the thing about a sport like MMA when the roster, you know, say even just the UFC, which has, what, over, like, 400 people or whatever. I haven't watched wrestling in a while, but, I mean, there's not many wrestlers, right? So it's easy. Each show, they have only just a handful of guys that do it. And even when you watch the TV show, so maybe they have, what, I don't know, I'm guesstimating 20, 30, 40 main stars in wrestling. How many fucking wrestlers are there?
They have a fair few more than that. But
you know, so it's easier for certain people to stand out when you have so few people that are going out. So you have these big stars. You got Sting and whoever, whatnot or whatever. So it's tough to expect everybody, all the different athletes, because there's so many athletes on a UFC roster or whatnot, to be at the same level of maybe some guys that are kind of forced because they perform like every other time the show is on or whatever. It just doesn't, happen
that's
way.
A key, right.
It's interesting because the other side of that is WWE wrestling is a weekly television show. In fact, it's twice weekly television show. And they have pay-per-views like once or twice a month. And they're able to sell storylines and push their personality. You could argue that means that the guys and girls in the UFC, when they do get their opportunity, they really do need to dial it up because they don't get that weekly spotlight. They might get fight week. They might get the occasional interview in between fight camps. But when the time comes, they need to... I think Jim Ross, the commentator, coined the phrase, turning your volume up to 11.
Right.
It's an old Spinal Tap reference, isn't it?
Sure.
But that's what you do. You be you, but you just turn the volume up a little bit.
100%.
And we've seen how it can work. And I think sometimes it becomes a bit disproportionate because you've got guys like Connor who are so good at it. But when he's one of only a few who does it, the fact, you know, his success and what he gets from it is kind of disproportionate. If everybody was pushing themselves, not necessarily going out there and, you know, boldly declaring what they're going to do every fight, but just being themselves, just being a little more open and being a bit more out there, it's, you want people to buy a ticket, you want people to care. And I was talking to John Gooden earlier today, and we were talking about some of the guys on the card who, you know, a lot of casual fans won't know too much about. And it's red corner versus blue corner, it's A versus B. But if you then sit them down and say, did you know this guy, he's on a 5-fight winning streak, he's won all his fights by knockout, former NCAA wrestler, took up boxing, fell in love with MMA, and he's fighting against this huge French guy who won his debut by brutal knockout, and they've put them against, and they're both rising prospects, they're putting them both against each other really early in their career. All of a sudden you think, well, that sounds like a fight I'm quite interested to watch. Whereas before, you see two names that you don't understand or don't recognise, and you think, yeah, you know. So it's
completely
all
agree.
there is an element of salesmanship to it, and I don't think you need to be false. I think you can be you, but just be open. Ben Rother was the perfect example of that. Okay, you know, he did the evil laugh, he does a bit of the dancing and all the rest of it. But when you interview him, what you see is what you get. He doesn't tell you lies. If you ask him a question, he will answer you and he'll be honest. He'll tell you what he thinks, and that's all you can ask of someone. But he, you know, to be that engaging and that open to answering quite often the same question time after time after time, as tends to happen at media days and stuff. But it gets him out there. And once people, you know, the little light bulb goes off and they think, this is going to help me. And, you know, I've gone back to this before with him. You know, the Dublin event was a turning point in his career in terms of the fans. His progression as a mixed martial artist came a little earlier. But with the fans, that Dublin event turned him around, and he didn't even compete on that.
Showed up, wasn't supposed to, couldn't fight.
No.
Showed up anyway, met with all the fans, made a ton of fans.
And I said this week,
he's great media.
He's the people's champion of the UFC.
Yeah. I guess the biggest thing that I can definitely say is, and every fighter has to realize this by now, the biggest thing is when you've got that one moment on the microphone, don't say, I'll take whoever the UFC gives me next. Just find something. Say somebody's name. Just say somebody's name. Whoever it is, whether it makes sense or not, just say somebody's name. And you know, when it is pre-fight build-up, I'm not saying you got to be disrespectful or whatever, but you don't have to be silly. But as you said, just turn it up to 11 a little bit. You know, say why you're confident in yourself. Everybody that steps in there is confident. Everybody feels good about themselves, but just don't be generic, I guess. I mean, I hate to say that, but you're so right. To me, I love mixed martial arts, but if you're watching two people you know nothing about, you can love the sport, you can love the art behind it, but goddamn, if you're just a little bit invested in one guy or the other, it changes everything you see. All right, real quick, news of this past week was a lot about John Jones, of course, and you and I, Cole Coffey, spent a lot of time talking about the John Jones situation before. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was on vacation a little bit, but things have changed quite a bit. We thought it was John Jones that was causing all the problem. Then it ends up being Daniel Cormier, who's hurt. Ovince St. Preux is going to be in there as well. A wild situation there. Mark Hunt even volunteered himself, and I was told from a couple of people behind the scenes that was not just a tweet. Like, he was actually making some phone calls trying to get that fight, which that would have been bizarre enough that if I'm John Jones, there's no way in hell I fight Mark Hunt. Yeah. There's no benefit at all in that. But I will say this. First of all, I got to say, I don't have a problem with the fact that this is an interim title. As weird as that sounds, I usually hate interim titles, but the fact that John Jones had his title stripped and given to someone else, they fought for his title without him involved in it, I really don't have a problem with the fact that this is an interim title fight. So the fight is weird, and normally I freaking hate interim title fights, but you know what? If Daniel Cormier is hurt, I'm glad John Jones is going to fight, and I don't mind this for an interim title.
It's definitely good to see him fight. He's been on the sideline for obvious reasons for too long. And if that's what it takes, I mean, and especially to keep giving it a main event status, you know, if that's what they need to help market it or whatnot, you know, again, like as we've heard from more and more fighters, you know, the interim thing just seems to happen all the time. They just now are throwing it around loosely where it used to be it was like a last minute choice, you know, worst case, you know, the champ's not going to be out. And it was usually just injury based. And now it seems like for whatever reason, you know, whether they're going to let them go off and fight in whatever random division or whatever.
Who are you referencing?
I'm not referencing anything in particular. I guess all the other ones are injury besides that one. But, you know, I'm glad to see it fight. I'm actually pretty excited about it. I think Ovince is going to maybe surprise people. Will he win? Maybe not, but I think he's going to show up as prepared and as ready for it as he can, and he's as tough as they come. He's got some power. I think he can give John some problems, so I'm excited to see that. Is it going to be as exciting as Daniel and John? Outside of the whole, you know, thing, I think there's a lot of questions that people want to see if Daniel has come up with the answer, because before it didn't seem that he had it. So I'm kind of sad that I'm not going to see that right away. It's going to happen eventually. But I still think it's good to see him fighting, to see Jones fighting. It didn't need to be an interim for me. I would have been happy seeing it, and I still would think it would have been fine putting it as a main event. I think just because the guy's injured, I mean, he hasn't even been injured that long, and just you're just going to immediately say it needs to be an interim. I don't agree with that.
Right.
I don't think it needs to be that way. I think people are still going to come to Jones fight.
Was Jones Cormier the number one fight on the horizon for you?
That was probably for the immediate yes.
Yeah.
That was for the immediate yes. I mean, even though we all kind of thought
that. I should say Cormier Jones. Cormier is the champ.
You
should. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I was really, really excited to see that, because I mean, this goes back to just the heat that they brought when I was still working for the UFC. The whole shoe incident, the whole fight, and the throw in the shoe, and just it was such an emotional roller coaster watching that happen. That when it finally got done, it was like, man, I could really use that again. You know, I mean, there's literally real hate and anger against two guys that are at absolute top of the game. And there's something about it that just, I mean, like when you look at Conor, you look at Aldo, yes, there was heat there because Conor got under Aldo's skin. So you actually got to see some emotion coming out of Jose. But Conor, you know, I don't know if that was really true. Like if there was real hate or if it's just him being a good salesman. You look at Jones and you look at Daniel. There's real fire there. They've really gotten under each other's skin, and I mean, I want to see that so bad.
I kind of forgot that you were still at the UFC at the time. Let me ask you a question, and it's kind of secondary to this, but I know you weren't sitting in an executive boardroom, but can you recall what the feeling was around the UFC at the time? Because it was such a weird argument, like, holy shit, this looks terrible. Like, they just brawled in the middle of the MGM lobby. But at the same time, it was the most compelling footage Yeah, it was on there. So what was the feeling around the office? Like, we've got to pretend like this didn't happen, or, oh my God, we've got a marketing goldmine.
Yeah, it you know, as much as people probably think that the UFC was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever, it was actually, people were pretty, I think, were scared about what it was going to do for the impression of the sport for the people that didn't really know. And they were probably pretty lucky that, for the most part, it was only some journalists that got maybe banged up by shoes and whatnot. Not shoes, but the shoe. It seems like now there are people are coming out in the woodworks, I got hit by the shoe, too. I'm like, really? You know, but whatever.
It's like the magic bullet. Just ricocheted
it
off,
hit
like
the ground,
people.
And the next thing I know, it bounced up and hit 14 other people. I mean, it could have been really, really bad. I know they were really worried about the fact that there were so many fans that got freaked out, and just random spectators. They were so in shell shock mode when it first happened that they were really, really upset, and they were upset at the fighters that it happened, and they were pissed. They were pissed that they did it. I mean, they jeopardized a lot by doing what they could have did. Both of them could have hurt somebody and possibly ended their career. And at the time, the UFC was like, here we are. We're going to try to put this in the middle of the main entranceway of the MGM and had this big thing, and we're going to make this big spectacle. And then the hugest mistake of a fight breaks out, and they were just so upset. So it wasn't like people were going around patting their back. Maybe deep down in closed doors, they were like, but for real, yo, that was awesome. But they didn't say that on the level with most of the people when they got together. Nobody was really celebrating. I mean, even those of us in production, like, that was badass. That was crazy.
Right.
But we were just like, wow, how is this going to play out? Because everybody was worried about the perception of what it was going to do to the casual fans. Because the whole time they've been constantly trying to reach new markets, reach whatever, trying to show that they're not thugs, they're not these bullies, they're not whatever. And then a brawl breaks out right in the middle of people walking around with their kids, they're on vacation, all this other stuff. And so, yeah, the UFC, it wasn't something that people on the level were saying, like, it was proud of. We were more like, how do we fix this? How do we show that these guys are seeking forgiveness and that they know that they made a mistake and whatever? And we pretty much, I mean, we showed what we could to amp the fight.
Right.
You know, we used what footage to kind of get it pumped up because you knew the fight was still going to happen. And it just showed that there was really something there.
I did like the fact that once it came time to have the fight, they went ahead and released all. I have a bad memory. Did we ever know officially who released the Are You There?
Oh, the off camera. Well, it wasn't off camera. It was on camera, was it? But it was the pre interview footage, wasn't
right.
it?
Yeah, I think it was an ESPN person, I believe.
That's right. That's where it was.
Because right. they were the ones.
The satellite feed was open.
It was already open, so they're the only ones that were receiving the feed at
so
the time.
So somebody from ESPN at the yeah. time. But wow. You know what? I do kind of like, because I can everything that you're saying, I think, is great insight, like what goes on behind the scenes and how they have to think about it. But once it came time to actually do the fight, just embrace it. Just
yeah.
there.
It was crazy. Like, literally, because they had to go do that live TV hit right after. So they took them and separated them into rooms. And at the time, you know, you still got people out in the middle of the lobby trying to grab the binged up, like, backdrop that was bent over, the flower planter. You know, there were injured employees. I mean, it was crazy. And at the same time, it's like the show must go on. You know, ESPN's waiting to do their live hit and all the other stuff, so they drag them in these rooms. They're trying to make sure and trying to collect everything. And then they had to get on the headset. So then they were still fired up, you know. And once they realized, hey, I got some ear. I mean, just imagine if you almost get that point where a fight's just about to happen, then it's like, well, we're going to separate you. But y'all can still look at each other. Y'all can still jaw at each other. And it was like, shit wasn't done, you know. So it was surreal because, you know, luckily, I mean, one of our good friends, Joe Williams, head of security, I mean, he got banged up bad.
Yeah,
I mean, he took a hard shot trying to stop it. And it's like, it could have been something that was very, very detrimental to the UFC.
There was a huge concrete planter back there that he got rocked into.
Yeah, he pretty much took Jones, and he was trying to separate from Daniel, and pretty much took the brunt of Daniel and Jones's weight on his back into this concrete planter. So, I mean, he's pretty much lucky that he didn't break ribs or whatever. And then it was just madness of elbows and arms flying and people trying to grab people. And it could have been really, really bad. So, but then they immediately separate him, and they're like, all right, now you got to go do this radio show or this TV show right after it. And but, yeah, from what I always heard, it was an ESPN or somebody, because, yeah, they had the audio going and somebody thought, oh, yeah, this would be great to do or to give to someone. But, you know, who knows? I mean, I assumed it was somebody that was shooting for them, but Yeah, there's real fireworks there. And so, yeah, as if you ask me, if, was that the fight I was most looking forward to? There's a lot of good fights on the horizon, but yeah, that one there was definitely probably on the top of my list.
The thing with Jones that I find quite interesting is, it's interesting how things quite often turn full circle. Think back to UFC 151. Mm-hmm. You know, he was supposed to, he was offered Chael Sonnen at short notice. He turned that fight down. And I was one of the people who absolutely hammered him for that.
I agree.
And I said, because I was of the view, you're the champion. You've had a fight camp. You should defend your title. And that was my view at the time. And that, indirectly or directly, depending on your view, led to the cancellation of that event. The fact that the card underneath wasn't strong enough to hold up without him on it is a reason it was cancelled. But now we're in a position where Cormier's fallen out, and I don't think anybody would have begrudged Jones saying, I'll sit back and wait.
Absolutely.
But what did he do? He jumped straight on Instagram and posted a video saying, anyone at 205, anyone at heavyweight, line them up, bring, you know, give me someone, let's fight. And it's the complete opposite of what happened at 151. And I just thought to myself, that's kind of cool, because it's a complete about turn from what had happened at 151. And he saved the show.
He did.
He saved the show.
No,
and, you know, he deserves a little credit for that. And some people perhaps won't be that keen to give him credit, because some people like him, some people don't. I thought that was a very smart move on his part for a whole load of reasons.
John Jones has been doing a couple interviews this past week, and our own Mike Bond actually had one stored up. He'd gone down to Albuquerque, spent a day with John Jones, and came up with a really nice piece. It was for Rolling Stone. It wasn't for MMA Junkie, but of course, you know, we all do a little bit of stuff on the side to make ends meet here and there. And, you know, Mike Bond's, yeah, dude, we got to do it, man. I mean, sometimes it sucks, but it's what it takes to pay the bills. So Mike Bond is turning tricks for Rolling Stone. And now this was a fantastic piece. If you haven't had a chance to read that piece from the young Mike Bond, be sure and do that. I also had a chance to speak with John Jones right before we jumped on a flight here for Zagreb, Croatia. And I wanted to share that phone call here. I actually was able to capture the audio as well. So that was a pretty fantastic accomplishment for me. So, you know, I think John Jones does deserve a little credit. Now, again, I understand why people are hating. I understand why people say, hey, I've heard this song and dance before. We've been down this road. But I don't know, man. I think this is the opportunity for John Jones to not only prove his doubters within the sport as far as his athletic ability and his desire as a champion, but also just as a human being, as a person. I mean, here's a guy that is incredibly gifted as an athlete, incredibly wealthy at a young age, beats up other grown men and MMA legends for a living as a young man. And imagine you get a little bit cocky sometimes when you do that. But I don't know. I enjoyed the conversation with John Jones, and seeing as how I – have no other audio to give you, I figure I might as well share this conversation with John Jones.
Hey, John, I've got you on the line with John Morgan. John, go ahead.
John Jones, how you doing, sir?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you taking the time, brother. I know it's a busy time for you, so thank you.
No problem. I just talked to anybody.
All right, man. We'll start. Hey, man, crazy year for you, man. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of good things, bad things. Where are you at mentally right now? Just are you at peace with everything that's happened? Do you have regrets? Are you wish you could change things? I mean, what's your feeling over how the past year has gone?
You know, right now I'm at peace. You know, I recognize my mistakes and you know, I'm just trying to do things better. So I'm at peace with myself. You know, I'm at a place mentally where, you know, I'm just making a vow to myself to continue fighting through the good and the bad, continue fighting, continue moving forward, staying positive, staying optimistic, and you know, continue just striving to be better and do things better, and eventually everything's going to work out for my good.
No doubt. Now, You took the high road, of course. I mean, I know this is a rivalry fight with you and Daniel, but when he pulled out, you definitely took the high road. But talk about your emotions when you did get the news. When you found out this fight was off, were you angry? Were you disappointed? I mean, obviously injuries happen in this game, but, I mean, this was such a big fight that everybody was looking forward to, is you getting your belt back. So what was your emotion initially when you heard he couldn't fight?
You know, Initially, I was I felt feeling sadness. I was sad for my coaches. I was sad for my fans. You know, we've all been doing lots of reps for almost a year now, focusing on Daniel Cormier. And we felt so well rehearsed, so well trained to just dominate Cormier. So the fact that that was going to be postponed, the fact that, you know, I got some trainers who, you know, I want to be the first world champion there to train. So the fact that I have to hold that off, can't give that to them right away, I was upset. But then I started to think, you know, everything happens for a reason. Maybe I was meant to go out there and fight someone different for him. So now we're going to go and we're going to take that same level of focus and energy. We're gonna point it all at Ovince now.
Yeah, let's talk about Ovince. You know, you kind of joked that short notice fights aren't really your thing, but you felt like you owed it to the fans. You said you were open to any light heavyweight, any heavyweight. The name comes up, Ovince St. Preux. What was your reaction then? Were you happy that that was the guy? Were you hoping for somebody different? What was your take when they said, you know, OSP's the guy?
Well, I didn't really have an opinion of who I would fight against. Right now, I feel better than ever. So, I'm taking things really seriously, and I feel like the best light heavyweight in the world. So if I'm the best light heavyweight in the world, then I got to be able to beat them all. So left it in the UFC's hands to give me whoever they gave me over. And right away we got to studying. You know, before the fight was announced, I had never watched any of the fights, not one. I knew nothing about his personality, nothing about him, nothing about his fighting style. And, you know, now we've been studying and I've learned a lot about his game. And I think he's a game opponent. I think he's a very dangerous opponent. And I'm excited to go out there and fight someone who's so young and hungry in the sport.
Yeah, it's kind of a no-lose situation for him. I mean, he's getting the opportunity of a lifetime. I wondered, I mean, did anybody around you say, John, man, you know, you don't want to risk this, man. We've got that Cormier fight still out there. That's a big money fight. That's a big part in your career. Did anybody say, hey, maybe we shouldn't take this fight?
You know, that's something we recognize that it is definitely a win-win situation for Ovince, but at the same time, you know, we believe that we're at our best right now, we're in our prime, so, you know, if you're the best fighter everywhere, you need to be willing and able to defeat any of them at any time, so, you know, Ovince has been performing really well. I figured he'd make it up the rankings at some point anyways, to get a win over him now, so why not?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it, but of course, I mean, you did have to spend a couple days in jail in the middle of your training camp. Unfortunate situation for sure. When you were there, man, was there any realization, any moment like, dude, I'm John Jones, man. I'm trying to get ready for a title fight, and look at these people around me. Like, what am I doing? Was there any kind of moment like that where you just said, I got to make some changes?
So being in jail, you know, it hurt me being in there because I felt as if I was really let down by this officer in the situation.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the system. They let me down in this one. I'm not blaming them for anything. I've definitely caused a lot of my own heartache. But in this situation, I really felt as if, you know, I was profiled and picked on. You know, I spent 3 days in jail for revving my engine. now I have all these new terms, conditions, my probation, also revving my engine. I feel let down. But I'm a very optimistic person, and I always try to find the good in everything bad that happens in my life. So as I sit there in the cell, I just felt humble. I felt regrounded. Thought about what type of life I've created for myself and how I'm blessed to have so much. And how fast it ought to be taken away.
Have you watched... I was going to say, have you watched the video? I mean, there's no doubt that cop was being a jerk, man. There's no doubt about it. But have you watched the video at all? And were you like, embarrassed at all? Are you frustrated that you got to see that?
I've watched it quite a few times. And the officer definitely, I feel as if that officer, I think the moment he saw my face, he knew he was going to be giving me a hard time.
Appreciate talking about that. Let's enough about the bad stuff, man. Let's talk about the good. The training, man. Every Instagram post you post, every Twitter picture. I mean, you look in incredible physical condition by all accounts. Everybody around you, you're looking maybe better than ever at any point in your career. So, what is it right now? What is fueling you? What is driving you to be this version of John Jones? Is it that belt? Is it Daniel Cormier? Is it something else? What's driving you?
You know, I think one of the biggest things that drive me is, I think my fans know that one thing about John Jones, my fans know is that I'm resilient. I try to represent resilience. Never quitting. You know, Vitor Belfort almost broke my arm. I continued to fight through that fight. I was in a substance, had me bleeding, you know, had me losing these regular rounds, and then championship round, I pulled together and can dominate. Just getting in trouble with the law, you know, and just continuing to move forward. You know, there's things I've been through in my childhood, things I've been through in my life, you know, growing up the way I grew up, you know, me knowing my own story, you know, I've always moved forward, you know, and I want people to be encouraged. You know, struggling with drug addiction, you know, and now being sober and owning it, kicking sobriety's ass, you know. I want to represent never giving up, no matter what. You know, there was a shirt that was made for me that says, I'm broken. And I really take that slogan to heart, and my life's motto now. But don't break easy, John, no matter what you're going through. You know, attitude's everything. You can do it no matter what. Chell Sonnen, you know, I had a broken toe and I finished that fight, you know. So it's just like, you know, never quit, never surrender. If I can do it, you guys can do it too. We all have that resilience. You know, we're all stronger than what we think. Mind over matter. So I just feel like at the end of the day, when I win my belt back, it's going to be that much sweeter because of all the hard I went through to get there.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate it, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I look forward to seeing you out here in Vegas in a couple weeks, man.
You be good, my brother.
All right, talk to you soon, John. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was my conversation earlier this week with John Bones Jones, who, as Simon said, he did save the day. Listen, I should mention we're in the Sheraton Zagreb in the lobby right now. A lot of action going on around us. I see the highly esteemed Mark Ratner has joined over here with us. We've got a lot of UFC operations staff hanging out over there. Happy hour is well in advance right now. Of course, it is weight cutting day right now. This is a Sunday night card, so most of the fighters that are on this card are tucked away somewhere, sweating and getting out all the fluids that they can. So, listen, if you like what you're hearing, do us a favor. Go to iTunes, rate us, review us, subscribe to us. You could be like my man Wiseberry right here.
Oh, Wiseberry.
Wiseberry gave us 5 stars. He just said, fun show. Good to know John Morgan. Frosty beverages all around.
I like that.
Simple, direct, to the point. But I got nothing wrong with there. You got praise for John Morgan. You got praise for Frosty Beverages. You got 5 stars. Really not missing anything. Maybe a mention of cold coffee would be.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. I mean, I know deep down in his heart he was thinking about me.
He was.
But so it goes without saying. I mean, he was just like, hey, it's understood. So it's all good.
It is understood. We fell short of our goal of getting a review in the Croatian iTunes store. I was hoping to make that happen. It didn't happen.
They're probably too busy tagging the building right now. So probably there's somebody tagged it somewhere.
5 stars.
5 stars, just
MMA
like
Roadshow.
MMA Roadshow. Right, it might be right next to that Uber stand on that wall that we saw.
That's
last
fantastic.
Night. Somebody wrote Uber on the wall.
It is so cheap, man. Speaking of Uber, we've been taking Ubers around town for like $2.50. Like,
it's unreal.
It's fantastic here. We're also on Stitcher. We're also on SoundCloud.
Yep. We're working on getting on Google Play.
We're on Twitter, of course. You can always hit us up at MMA Junkie John, at The Cold Coffee. That's T-H-E-E Cold Coffee. At Ken S. Hathaway, if you know who that guy is.
Representing my Ohio State shirt.
Representing
right
the mm-hmm. Ohio State mm-hmm. University. Mm-hmm. On Instagram, the MMA Roadshow, all that stuff. We're always having a good time hanging out. Simon Head is here with us again as another round of frosty beverages are being delivered. Things are perfect. Life is good in Croatia. Can't complain about it. I went from being in a very bad mood earlier to a very good mood now that these frosty beverages are here. Before we made it out to Croatia, a couple just things to talk about. We did see World Series of Fighting 30 last week.
Yep.
You know, not their best show. Not their best show. I think some impressive wins. It was John mm-hmm. Fitch, man. If you haven't seen John Fitch's post-fight interview, not the most fantastic performance by John Fitch. He did what John Fitch does. Yeah. He ground out, picked up a welterweight title, but you know, his first world title, and asked him what it meant to him, and he almost broke down in tears and just said that, you know, he almost lost his father very recently to some heart problems, and it crossed his mind that his dad would never see him win a world title, and to be able to pick up that world title while his dad was still alive was emotional for him, and I thought it was cool to see that emotion out of him. David Branch, of course, did pick up another victory. Man, that is a guy that has done well for himself in fighting for World Series of Fighting. So, 4 decisions on the main card wasn't the best effort they've ever had, but you know, there were some fun fights on the undercard. Steve Cazzola looked great. Adam Aquaviva looked great. Abubakar Nurmagomedov, which is of course Khabib Nurmagomedov's little brother, he looks like the real deal. They got to get him on a main card soon. He's been fighting on the prelims, but overall, not a bad effort. They had a good crowd, man.
Yeah,
at the Hard Rock, mm-hmm. that was one of the better crowds I've ever seen for a non-USC event. In that building. So we'll see. It's kind of a new era with them. Mike Mersch is over there.
That's strong.
Yeah.
It's a strong leader. You're right. It was a good show, and it was great to see Fitch just show a lot of enthusiasm after the fight, and then to see him get moved by it, you know, it was really good. And, you know, I'll be honest and say that I was kind of one of those guys that, you know, I had picked Fitch over and over and over and had been let down, and this was one of the ones that I actually thought Fitch wasn't going to do it. But Fitch came in and he did what he does well. He controlled the fight, ground him out, and then to see him afterwards and see the emotion and see what it meant to him meant a lot for me. It really convinced me that he was still really all in,
yeah,
going out there, not just going through the motion, that it still really meant something to him. So that in turn really kind of swayed me back. So I'm back on Team Fitch again, you know, and hopeful that he keeps getting good wins and keeps putting it out there, because I thought he looked really, really good, and Branch was uber impressive. He just looked like a stud, and the fact that, I mean, he's got like two different belts in the in divisions That's or whatever. Insane. He's unreal, and I love that he teased you about it.
he was happy to call me out that I didn't give him the respect he deserved. So
I think that's half the fun I see when I go out around with you, when people throw it in your face when you haven't said something about them or don't do. So it's always fun, you know. They always do it with good intention.
Sure.
Nobody's really ever, you know, busting your balls too bad. But no, it was a good show. You're right. We're big fans of the World Series, and I hope they continue to do great things. And I know they're pushing out, and you know, you got the whole WSOF global side or whatever that's really going out and doing some new fights and stuff. So good for them. You know, I think it's good that there's, you know, what most people say don't think it is competition to the UFC, but whatever. Even if it's the little brother, it's good to see other organizations pushing out there, doing their part. The UFC can only do so much.
Opportunities for fighters.
Yeah. And so fighters, I mean, even with Bellator, I think the more the merrier. Let people be able to, you know, if their wings maybe don't get as high and wide in the UFC, go somewhere else. Maybe soar for a little bit, come back and fight with the big boys and see what happens.
I don't see, you know, people sometimes cheer against World Series of Fighting, cheer against Bellator. If you're a fan of the sport, don't cheer against those organizations. Now, listen, we don't cover other organizations the way we cover the UFC. There's no doubt about it. UFC is number one. This is the biggest organization in the sport. This is the one we cover because this is where our traffic comes from. This is where our web traffic comes from. But if you're a fan of mixed martial arts, don't cheer for failure for these other organizations, man. That's just other outlets for guys to fight, and gals, of course.
Gals, yeah.
Victor's incredible.
Victor.
You need to cheer for these smaller organizations because this gives fighters an opportunity to work. So, we'll see where World Series of Fighting goes from there. I did want to say one other thing that we got to do. We got to walk through T-Mobile Arena. Simon, of course, you're going to be in Vegas over the summer. You'll be there for UFC 200, which is the first time that the UFC will be in that building. We got to go see it a day before it opened and walk through it. Still, it was still very much under construction. Obviously all the big structures were done, but, you know, all the last little paint jobs and stickers here and things like
that. Stickers on the different bars and, you know, and the concourses themselves still had a lot of construction materials set up and – which is crazy because, they had to show like another day or two after.
We were basically about 24 hours out from the first show, and there was still stuff being pulled away.
I think somebody was stressing a little bit probably somewhere in that building.
But a beautiful, beautiful venue. And I know you've been interested in coming to Vegas lately. It's been a new experience for you over the last year. You've kind of gotten it down now. We've showed you a little bit of all sides of Vegas. I think you know it pretty well. How are you excited to come check out this venue?
Absolutely. I mean, first off, up until last year, I'd never been to the US, let alone Vegas.
Wow.
And I've been there a few times now. It's almost like my second home now. So it's the place I've been to the most other than where I live. So it's kind of weird. That venue is going to be something pretty special. And you know, from what you were saying to me about some of the suites and some of the facilities that they've got there, and it's also, you think the MGM Grand, it's basically a temporary arena in many ways. The seats move in and out depending on what sort of event they're putting in there. What you've got here, and I actually went on Getty Images this afternoon to check out some of the images from the Killers concert that they opened the arena with. And obviously it's not the whole bowl because you've got the stage at one end, so it's kind of blocked off at one end. But that's one darn fine looking arena, let me tell you. And I think the people who will probably benefit the most will be the spectators, because just looking at the concourses and the concessions and everything that's going to be there, it's going to be a fantastic venue. And of course the other benefit is more seats means more fans getting in there to watch the fights. And you know, I know there's been in the past the UFC have been a little bit hesitant to play the big stadium shows because they want the people in the cheapest seats to still have a really good fan experience and to be able to enjoy the fights, even though they're the furthest people from the octagon. 20,000, I think, is pretty much the optimum amount. You've got that intimacy of it being an enclosed arena, but I think just that the extra few thousand is going to give it a little bit extra oomph when the walk-ins kick in. And someone else who I can imagine is absolutely champing at the bit to get in there will be AL3.
Yeah, right.
The UFC DJ.
Fun point.
He must be rubbing his hands together, waiting to get his mitts on that PA system.
That's a funny point. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. You know, I wanted to go to that Killers concert. Killers, of course, I'm sure most people know who the band is. They are a local Las Vegas band, so that's the only reason they got the honor of opening it up. I am a Killers fan. I've seen them before in concert, and I think they're fun. Fantastic band. They got some great music. I wanted to go, but it overlapped, of course, with the trip out here to Croatia. And I definitely wanted to come see Croatia and see the event out here. So I had to miss it, but we did get to do this walkthrough. I'm telling you right now, if you're planning on coming to UFC 200, or if you're paying attention and you've kind of been on the edge about coming to Vegas for a UFC event, from what I understand, they're still going to use MGM Grand Garden. They'll probably even use Mandalay Bay here and there, but T-Mobile, of course, is going to be for the premium fights. If you see that it's going to be a T-Mobile Arena, come out, because, as you said, Simon, I can't wait to go into this thing when it's full, you know, and seeing how a thing plays out. I think I'm going to try to buy tickets to something before UFC 200 just so I can go experience it as a spectator, because we saw it empty, and the opulence in there is insane. The suites, the event level suites that they're called, are sick, dude. You get 16 tickets, you're underneath, you're literally like on the ground floor, you've got like, you know, a buffet set up for you, a custom bar set up for you where they get your preferences, they're serving you, and then you literally just walk right out of your suite and you've got 16 lower level seats right there, and they're more like, you know, leather and, you know, just sick like that. Then the regular suites, typical of what you see in most arenas, but that doesn't exist at MGM Grand, you know. They look fantastic. Of course, they're brand new, and even the seating, instead of stadium seating, you know, like little seats, it's leather couches and that sort of thing. And then there's this huge nightclub. I mean, it's just literally just going to go on. Cold Coffee shot some footage there. We're actually going to put together a video. I think it'll probably come out next week, where we show a little bit of behind the scenes along with some other footage that they're providing us of the opening night and that sort of thing. So this thing is sick. I'm excited for 200. I will say this. It's going to be interesting to see, because there is about, I think they said it was like 80 seats or so of press level seating up at the very top of the arena. And, you know, the UFC has always had the media
On the floor,
cage side. Now, that's not the case with basketball and hockey. And, of course, this arena already has basketball locker rooms, hockey locker rooms, because they're hoping for the best. We, as Las Vegas residents, don't have a professional sports team. It sounds like we may get an NHL hockey team awarded to us later this summer. I guarantee you, if MGM, because this was all privately funded, I guarantee you if MGM put in $375 million along with AEG, they have a pretty good feeling a professional sports team is coming there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I know that these things work behind closed doors with rich people in strange ways, but I think we're probably going to get a team. But so it'll be interesting to see if the UFC utilizes that and puts everybody up at the top in a press box like they would with most other sports.
It's interesting because the way – and we kind of discussed this the other day, and we were talking about the logistics of it as someone watching the fights. Mm-hmm. Most of those other sports that you refer to when we talked about soccer as well, mm-hmm. where they do a similar thing, you need the wide angle. You need to see, you need that depth of field.
It's a better view from the top because you need to be able to see everything that's happening on the field.
But in the UFC, when you're talking at such a focused small area, you're looking at two athletes in an octagon. From our point of view, I think being closer is probably better because you actually get... You know, you're up close and personal with what's happening. You get the reactions. The other benefit of where
sounds,
we sit is
the
sounds.
The facial expressions, the things that you can see.
One of the things that will live with me forever for the rest of my career is the sound of Edson Barboza's body kicks on Tony Ferguson last year. And just hearing that, you just think, my goodness. And then for Ferguson to go on and win. But you wouldn't get those experiences up on the top tier. So the other benefit that you get is... You get the reaction of the fighters as they go past press row. You occasionally get a bit of corner.
Mm-hmm. You can grab a little quote sometimes if you're able to get their attention as they walk by.
Yeah, or you can accidentally end up with a water bottle on the floor in front of you. Which I'll let you tell that story.
That was the greatest story ever. Yes, in London, the poor man here next to me, Simon Head, didn't. I thought it was your water bottle that you accidentally knocked off.
It was your photographer Pear who's sitting just across.
It was Pear's water bottle.
It was. He doesn't even know this.
Are you serious?
He doesn't. He's not aware of this.
So Pear was the one that dropped the water bottle.
Let me explain. At the start of the event, Pear came over to me with I think he had a couple of bottles of water. He said, can I leave one just behind your laptop there? I said, yeah, no problem. Fine, you go for it. And as the night went on, the water bottle got a bit lighter and lighter.
Sure.
And then during all of the hullabaloo over Scott Ascombe's knockout of Chris Dempsey, one of the knockouts of the year.
Fantastic.
The water bottle ended up on the floor, empty. So I managed to grab the attention of a female photographer who was sat directly opposite where we were. I said, can you pass me that bottle because it's on the floor? And she went to pass it to me, but her reach didn't quite make it. It was a couple of inches just too short. And rather than waiting for me to actually get hold of the bottle, she just let go of it. And it therefore fell back into the walkway again. At which point I'm thinking, well, someone needs to pick that up.
Yeah,
so I'm trying to get her
on this water bottle.
Exactly, you know, this fighter's going to come past in a minute, right? So I'm trying to get her attention. And then this hand appears from stage left, picks up this bottle. But this hand's wearing a black UFC glove. I'm thinking, oh, no. And I look up and it's Chris Dempsey. And he gives me the bottle. I'm like, thanks. And off he goes. This is a guy who's been
just got
knocked
starched.
Spark out. Absolutely brutal knockout. And John, being the good friend and colleague that he is, immediately did what every good friend of mine would do and jumped straight on Twitter and said, to add insult to injury, Simon Head just made Chris Dempsey pick up his water bottle. And at which point, a small cross section of Twitter decided to berate me for my unprofessionalism. And it was,
and Simon's like, dude, you got to correct him and tell him that's not what happened. I was like, I will.
Eventually. It was a good 5 minutes. You let me stew for a while. You let me stew for a while. But to be fair, that's exactly what I would have done as well. So
Of course you would have.
All's fair in love and war.
Great times. I tell you what, I want to share a little bit of news, but only just a tease of news. Since we were late, since we rolled the dice and screwed up, I want to say that there is going to be a new addition to the MMA Junkie team announced very soon. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to leave it at that. But I will say this. Fans of the MMA Roadshow will be excited. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
That's all I'm going to say.
That's good.
That's all I'm going to say. Right there.
That was a tease.
That was a good tease.
That's a good tease.
That's good. Can you tie peanuts in my mouth? That's why I shouldn't
talk.
You
have what in your mouth?
Nuts.
Wow. Him clarifying salty. That didn't make that any better.
I do want to say one other thing, too, and we're going to wrap up. I don't want to go too long, especially because we are invited for Frosty Beverages, and we need to get this thing edited, posted, and go get a couple of cocktails because we have earned it after what was a crazy day. I do want to say something. I saw that this week was Jeff Sherwood's last week with Sherdog, which is incredible. Jeff Sherwood, of course, started Sherdog. And if you're a longtime fan of the sport like I am, there's no doubt that Sherdog is a huge part of your life. They were, of course, you know, the leading website for many, many years and are still very, very relevant in the space. Of course, daily I'm on the Fight Finder. That's what we use. Even though there is an official mixed martial arts database, we at MMA Junkie use Sherdog as the official record because, you know, they have an entire team that helps tend to that thing and enters data and the thing's amazing. And, of course, they have a staff just like we do writing articles. But Jeff Sherwood is no longer going to be with Sherdog, and I think that's a – you know, I'm anxious. I think he was doing a final radio show today, and I'm anxious to hear what he has to say, and I will definitely be listening, and I recommend everybody else does as well because no doubt about it, Jeff Sherwood was an absolute pioneer. And I actually – a lot of people inside the industry know this, but probably a lot of people, you know, outside don't. But I almost went to work for Sherdog in kind of the early days of Junkie. Things were going well with Junkie, but Sherdog – we started speaking together, and man, they were fantastic people. I negotiated with them, I had essentially accepted a position with Sherdog. It wasn't easy because, man, I bleed Junkie blue, but at the time it was a great offer, and my primary responsibilities, of course, is to put food on the table for my family, man, they were fantastic. Everybody I met at Sherdog was great. Welcomed me with open arms, and I had essentially accepted a position with him. And at the last second, danced up, still the editor-in-chief at MMA Junkie, came back and said, listen, we want to make one last final play to keep you. I'm not going to lie, we can't do any better than this, but we really want to keep you around. And it was a good enough offer that I stayed. Hopefully didn't upset the people too bad at Sherdog, because I had basically accepted the position at that time. But I have nothing but love for those people over there. And to see that Jeff Sherwood is leaving, yes, he sold the company several years ago. But, hey, we sold MMA Junkie, too, in 2011. And that doesn't mean that we feel like any less part of it. So, I got to imagine it's a bittersweet day for Jeff Sherwood. And I don't know, just wanted to give my own personal shout-out, because he's a good dude. He's always been very, very kind to me. And it's funny, as I get a chance to travel around the world, I hear about, especially in these emerging markets, how a lot of the mixed martial arts sites kind of battle each other, and it's kind of a contentious relationship. It was like that in the United States a long time ago. The Junkie, Weekly, Sherdog didn't necessarily get along, all that well. MMA Fighting, all those things, and now we kind of all do, simply because we see each other every damn week. We're all working together. But there was a time where it was kind of contentious, and now it's kind of we're all friends. Hell, I see those guys at the other websites more than I see my family sometimes. So kind of sad to see, I guess, one of our own stepping out. So, anyway, just wanted to give that little shout out there. Simon, thanks for joining us, man. Any other last thoughts about you this week in Croatia?
Well, first off, it's great to be back on. I always enjoy catching up with you two guys. And we spoke about the road show earlier in the week. And you boys need a pat on the back as well. A full calendar year.
Yeah.
In the books. And it's only growing and getting better. You'll get that Croatian review at some point. Don't worry about that.
It's my life goal.
There you go. But no, it's great fun to be part of it, and traveling and getting to cover these shows and help do whatever little I can to sort of grow the sport a little bit where I come from. It's a very privileged thing that I get to do, and I don't take that for granted. That's for sure. And thoroughly looking forward to the weekend. Great to be on the show, and. We'll raise a glass to the next 12 months of the roadshow.
Damn straight we will. Cold coffee.
I like it.
You've settled down over the last hour or so. I don't see quite the anger that was on your face when we first sat down here, so I'm taking that as a good thing. Maybe it's the frosty beverages
could
setting
be,
in.
Could be the peanuts. And the chips. Or crisps.
Crisps.
The crisps.
Hello, Governor.
We're so European over here. No, things are good. And I did want to mention, just before we forget, you guys were talking about the T-Mobile Arena, but they set up another thing on that, just on the outside of the T-Mobile Arena called the Park.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a setup area that's in between the New York, and the Monte Carlo and the T-Mobile Arena of restaurants and bars. So it's trying to cater to the fact that, people that want to come to a show now can come hang out for possibly hours before outside the arena and be completely amused. And it just makes for a much more entertaining, sort of spectacular area outside of T-Mobile. So when you're there, plan on getting there early so you can check out the park, because it's there's nothing like that in Vegas anywhere else for what they're trying to do there. So it was really, really cool. And as for Croatia, it's been beautiful. I'm looking forward to the fights. I think it's great. I think if somebody out there is really, really into the roadshow, feel free to write a review on iTunes, like you said, or tag one of these lovely architecture buildings around here and take a picture, send it to us on Instagram, and you will get a shout out for sure. You might get arrested, but maybe they don't arrest for that here, because obviously I haven't seen a building that doesn't have tagging on it. So I think it's a cultural thing around here, but would love to see it. So it's been great. And like Simon said, it's been a fun year, and it's a great place to start the year going forward and keep it going. Good things.
Yeah,
good
and
things.
As long as directing people to commit a crime in Croatia doesn't get the show shut down, then we're going to be all right. So
we might get booted.
We might see you again next week. We might be locked up in a Croatian prison. Either way, thanks for listening.
That's a nice crisp. I say, oh boy, that's a nice crisp.
I didn't hear you when they set him down.
That's a... That's a bloody nice chip.
Spiffing snack.
Spiffing snack, you say? I'm working on my cold coffee level of voice.
I think you're right there with me.
Did we add any characters this week?
I did somebody, but I can't remember who it was. Oh, was it Mark Hunt? I got to work on that one. I'm not sure if I'm ready to bring that one out.
Hello, Governor.
Who let Dick Van Dyke on the podcast? See, my voice is a caricature to you guys anyway, so it's...
It is.
We still really don't understand what you're saying.
To be honest,
we just kind of nod at you.
Yeah.
Did anybody actually understand what Robert Whitford was saying live? Or did
yeah,
you
I did.
Go back and listen on tape?
I have no clue.
I used to work in an office full of Scotsmen, so I gradually got used to it, so...
No, it wasn't so bad.
He was taking a piss at you, and you were just like...
Oh, he was.
Yeah, at that point, it was the furthest thing from my head at that point. I was just like, gotta get this going.
And then I sat down with my voice recorder.
No, he's a character.
All of a sudden, he's like,
good.
Nah,
I like it. I like guys that can be in a cutting weight but still have a personality.
All right, we dialed back in and rolling?
Yep.
Much respect, John. Well, I appreciate it, man. I know you're a busy day. Last thing, any other last thoughts, messages, anything like that that you want to get out there?
Nope, area. Morgan, I've done about 5 interviews today, and I guarantee you, I just went the most in-depth with you, so you should have the best one.